Hello, hockey humans of the world, and welcome to Tough Call Pod Season 2, where I talk about all things player safety in the NHL. Questionable hits, controversial calls, join the over 2,500 others who follow me on Twitter, at Tough Call Blog, like and follow the Tough Call Facebook page, and find me on Instagram as well, Tough Call Podcast, for videos of all the latest incidents and to hear my takes on them. Send me your own clips of any hit or call you'd like me to talk about, and take a second right now and hit the subscribe button on this podcast. And while you're there, you could also leave me a review, preferably 5 stars. It'll really help me reach even more people and get the message out on how we can reduce the instances of head contact and concussions in hockey. Did you subscribe? Perfect. And thank you. Now on with the show. Hi, everyone. Well, the first round is almost over, and doesn't this seem like it's been the most exciting first round in a long time? I seem to say that every year now. Maybe I'm just really enjoying the playoff hockey these days, but Carolina-Nashville was fantastic that series. The Leafs and Canadians are living up to the hype, that's for sure, and the Oilers got swept. Swept! McDavid, Crosby, Ovechkin, they're all out. And something I will say is, we always tend to focus on the negative. What went wrong with the Oilers? What happened to the Penguins? Why have the Capitals only made it past the second round once in Ovechkin's entire career? Well, how about what went right with the Jets? Let's give Scheifele and Ehlers and Hellebuck their due. That was fantastic. And how about Tuukka Rask? He walked away from last year's playoffs, and here he is leading the charge. As good as he's ever been, and he remains unfazed to start round two. What a performance last night. Lots of positive, exciting stories to follow, and of course, Game 7 coming up tomorrow night between Montreal and Toronto. I mean, does it get better than that? And the best news for me is, if you don't already know, I started a YouTube channel called Tough Call heading into the playoffs, and I picked up over 100 subscribers during the first round, and in fact, I'm looking, and I see I almost have 125 right now and growing every day. If you haven't already, please subscribe to that channel, Tough Call on YouTube, and follow the companion Twitter account, at NHL Call. Now, I still have my original account at Tough Call Blog, and I'll still be using that daily, as I do now, for all my discussion and interaction. And in fact, I just passed 3,000 followers there. But at NHL Call is the new account I started, which is exclusively to share my videos on YouTube. So even if you follow me already on Twitter, you should also follow at NHL Call. This is the new account I started, which, like I said, it shares my videos and around social media, and I passed 100 followers on that this morning, so thanks very much for that, and thanks for all the support with clips and questions you send, and keep on liking, sharing, following, subscribing. The word is definitely getting out. But there has been some negatives throughout these playoffs as well, and unfortunately, much of it has to do with the quality and inconsistency of officiating. I've already built up quite a tally of suspendable offenses, and for most of those, you can see the explanation videos online at my YouTube channel. But one incident I wanted to talk about was the Dmitry Orlov incident, getting a major penalty for checking Kevin Miller, and then it was reduced to a minor penalty. I do not understand why that was reduced, and I don't know why it wasn't suspended. Orlov was going to miss, and I made a video about this on YouTube. You can check it out for the details. But basically, Orlov was going to miss. He was overcommitted one way, and Miller cut across the other way. So Orlov jumped and reached out with his hands and hit him in the head. And people are saying, well, what did you want to do? Let him go? No, I don't expect him to let him go. But what I expect him to be able to do is pivot and skate shoulder to shoulder with him. If you can't make your hit at the moment you want to, then you're going to have to come up with some other way to block that player from getting past you without taking a penalty, and especially without jumping into their head. And I know if he doesn't hold him up a little bit, that forward in general, I'm not talking about Orlov and Miller anymore, I'm talking about general situations where if a defender doesn't hold up the forward coming in, he's going to have a clean shot at his D partner when the D goes back for the puck by the corner, and then he's going to take a run at him. And sometimes you have to allow these little things in order to keep the game safer. Maybe you allow a little bit of a hold or a little bit of an interference to block that forward from coming in. And people actually say, you know, that possibly makes the game safer. It saves them running the defender right into the boards from behind and driving their head through the glass. And they say that as if it's so reasonable. And I get it. I grew up in an era where as part of our breakout drill, we'd start with a dump in into our own end zone. And on the way back, we practiced hooking and holding the forechecker. We actually practiced it. And you practiced timing, letting them go, so that by the time your D got the puck, your attacking player would be in between you and your defender, and it would make it easier for them to pass you the puck. It was actually a skill they taught, was interference and obstruction. It made perfect sense then, but You just knew you'd be hooked going in on a forecheck too, but not anymore. You can't do that. Now a player can build up steam and kill the defender if they wanted it to. So I know people are saying, wouldn't it be better if they went back to the old way where they could hold them up a little bit? But I have a different idea than that. Call the penalty when that player does run that person into the boards. How many times do you see a forward go right at a defender, drive them through the back from behind, and what do we want to say? That defender turned. We blame it on the defender. We don't call it. We want to make sure that forward is allowed to run that player no matter what. And if that defender gets hit, so what? It's his fault for not protecting himself. That is such dumb logic. And instead of making the forward be better at hitting and angling and making a skilled play on the defender, instead, to stop it, you want to allow the other defenseman to hold the guy up at the blue line? It doesn't make any sense. You're allowing a penalty so that you can stop a player from committing another penalty. It's ridiculous. Especially right now, those runs from behind aren't even called penalties. It would be so easy to fix if you just started calling them. Players would adjust to that aspect of it, just like they adjusted to the aspect where you now can't hold a forechecker up, where you used to. Now they've stopped holding it. So if we can convince that defender to stop holding, why can't we convince the attacker to not run the defender from behind into the boards? And I hear it all the time, oh, but I'm old school, though. It's like it's some badge of honor. I love old school hockey. I'm more of an old school hockey fan. Like it's something you're born into and no one else can achieve the level of old school you somehow embody. Now, don't get me wrong. Not everyone means it like that. So if you have ever said to me, but I'm old school, it doesn't automatically mean that's how I feel about you. It doesn't mean that's how I think you meant it. But there are people who mean it like that. Like they're better than you somehow. Like you're not as good of a fan as them because they are old school. What does old school even mean? Well, first of all, it implies there's a new school. And lately, old school seems to mean any amount of physicality is a credit to old school. Any amount of heart and honor is old school. And there's basically nothing new about good about new school. Anything that new school adds is like making the game softer and weaker and all these analytics and things like that. There's nothing good about it. No, I don't need analytics. I have a special sense of who's good and who isn't. I am old school. I use the eye test. There was one person that even said, and I swear this is true, they said, the players who have the best analytics are usually just the best players anyway, so analytics don't tell us anything. I mean, that speaks for itself, but I watched old school hockey. I grew up with old school hockey. I played in the old school era, and not much about today's game is physically old school. I gotta tell you, you think you're old school diehard fans, but there doesn't seem to be as much honor or purpose these days, like when fighting and physicality were for some noble cause or code. It doesn't happen. Things look more today like they're done out of a sense of duty, something some person told these players needs to be done. And I tweeted recently that there is no code, there's 100 codes, and no two teams are ever playing by the same one. And the best recent example I can give of that is from this playoffs, the Nick Foligno fight with Corey Perry after the Tavares injury. And that seems like eons ago now, but seriously, what the heck was that? I mean, Foligno said he knew it was accidental, but he saw his captain down, and Perry needed to answer for that. It goes back to what I say when people try to tell me about why fighting is in the game. It doesn't need to be. Players don't care when something is clean or not, whether it's accidental or not. They aren't trying to keep cheap shots out of the game with fighting. And watching the mental gymnastics of people trying to justify this fight was something I'll never forget. It's like Family Feud. My favorite answers on Family Feud are the ones people cheer for and try to justify the most. It's the answers that make the least amount of sense. For instance, the question is, name a barnyard animal that flies. And the person says, bees. There's the briefest of pauses, the very smallest moment where only one person is clapping because they were going to clap no matter what the person said. But then everyone clues in at the exact same moment how stupid the answer is. And then all of a sudden you hear someone say, good answer. And the whole place erupts in furious applause and everyone is begging it to be up there. You're just cheering on this nonsense answer, willing it to be right. And inevitably you hear that buzzer, the big red X flashes onto the screen and all your effort and enthusiasm just sort of stops and it goes silent again. Sure, you could argue everyone was up on the bench tapping their sticks as loudly as ever for that. Everyone in the stands was out of their seats, not going to the concession stand during that fight or in that moment. But just like the Family Feud one, the answer didn't help anyone. No amount of explanation, could justify that it did. You cannot justify this fight. No matter how many ways Nick Foligno tries to tell us why he did it, no matter how many times fans try and say, well, it was the code, or he's right, and Corey Perry was a veteran too, and he answered the bell and knew it was coming and knew it was something he had to do. That's just it. They knew it was something they had to do. I don't think they understand why they were doing it. If anything, the NHL I want is way more old school than the current one. I'd like to go back to when players could actually take a hit and get on with the game instead of trying to police everything out of it, quote unquote. That's ironic, isn't it? And a final incident I'll talk about today is the Jeff Petrie hit on Alex Galchenyuk in overtime of last night's Game 6 between Toronto and Montreal, literal seconds before the game-winning goal was scored. I put out a video about it last night, after the game, and you can watch that at the Tough Call YouTube channel to find out how many games I give Petrie and why. It's gotten over 1,000 views already and a ton of comments, mostly from salty Montreal Canadiens fans, by the way. And I gotta say, they are not doing themselves any favors with me, these Montreal Canadiens fans. I follow a lot of Montreal Canadiens fans on Twitter. I have a lot of them follow me. They're very reasonable, loyal fans that I have great discussions with. It's a great relationship I have with Montreal Canadiens fans. But there's this group of people who I was going to suspend Jesperi Kotkaniemi after Game 3, and the messages they were leaving me were disgusting. I don't even want to repeat them here and again on this one. And I've never had that from any other fan base before. So if you are a Montreal Canadiens fan and you're a respectable person, make sure you get on the comments and tell these people they are not doing the Canadiens any favor. Wow, I've never seen anything from any other fan base than what I'm getting from some of these Montreal Canadiens fans on my YouTube videos. But whatever, it's great. They're spreading it around and they're giving me views. So all the power to them, I guess. But back to this Petrie hit, it's not like the Kadri hit. And I bring the Kadri hit up because it's kind of a blindside or kind of across the body angle of approach. Nazem Kadri did get suspended by the real NHL. Any word on his hearings coming up any day now, I'm sure. They'll eventually let him know when he can play again. But that's another topic for another day. I did a video on the Kadri one too, so if you want to see the comparison between how I feel about the Petrie hit and the Kadri hit, you can watch both those videos. I won't get into the specifics of each one here, but in general, a common theme for those incidents, and a lot like them, are players aren't trying hard enough to make a play on the puck. That's what causes a lot of the dangerous contact, especially in this case of Petrie. And I made note of that in the video, that he lifts his stick right off the ice, same as Kadri does. And I would say whenever you have two hands in your stick with your stick parallel to the ice in like sort of a cross check or hooking fashion, no good can come of it because you raise your body up when that happens. And so I did have someone ask me, a Twitter follower that's at the real pop can. They asked me, do you think players should go for the puck all the time? Just curious. And essentially for me, I'm going to answer that question here. Essentially, the answer is yes. You should always be focused on the puck. That is the reason you are making contact, to either knock a person off the puck or gain position on them to keep them from getting to the puck. So you should be puck focused all the time. Now, there are situations where it is better to leave the puck alone and protect yourself. You want to brace for contact and leave the puck alone and make sure you are safe. But in general, as the person delivering the check, you're most often going to want to be in a position where you can at least try and get the puck. And even if the puck is just about to be passed away and you don't think you're going to get there in time, being in a posture where you're going to play the puck, i.e. with your stick on the ice, with your knees bent and down low in a nice, good, solid squat with your base, the base of your feet spread out a little bit wider than normal, that is how you want to be when you deliver contact. And you should be in that position whether you think you're actually going to get the puck or not. You should go in with the mindset that you're trying for the puck. And you do this for two reasons. One, you're in the best, safest possible position for delivering contact because you're lower, your stick is in control, you're usually going a little bit slower, you're able to control your momentum, the timing, the location of your contact. And two, if you go in with the mindset of going for the puck and the puck isn't there anymore for you to get with your stick, chances are you're going to turn away or avoid the dangerous contact instead of going right through somebody when there's no point anymore, when the hockey purpose is gone. That's why I think you should be focused on the puck. No matter what you do, even if you go in knowing you're going to deliver a check or finish your check, I should say, you want to do it in the safest way possible anyway, or you should go in with that mindset. And the best way to do that is to think about where the puck is in relation to how you're delivering the check and why you're delivering the check. It'll make you do the right things. It'll keep you away from the head. It'll keep your velocity, the force of the check down. Everything is safer when it's done that way. So yes, I believe a person should either try for the puck or at least go in with the mindset that they're going to try for the puck on every situation. Hi folks, thanks for listening to Tough Call. If you're enjoying my takes on head contact and player safety, but you'd like to hear me talk about other aspects of hockey, I'd like to take just a minute and tell you about another project of mine, Bolton from Bolton. Bolton from Bolton is where I, Josh Bolton, and my brother Matt, you guessed it, Bolton, set each other up for lively hockey talk covering literally anything to do with it. It's not heavy analysis and stats, it's kitchen banter, like you do with your own family and friends. Head over to YouTube and subscribe to our Bolton from Bolton channel. That's B-O-U-L-T-O-N. Or find us on all audio formats as well. We find ourselves funny. Maybe you will too. And there's only one way to find out. See you there. And now, back to Tough Call. At Tough Call, I'm not trying to pick on specific teams or individual players. I want to make the game safer for every player on every team, across every league really, with no player left behind. I want to cover as many incidents as I possibly can to increase the sample size and make a stronger case for how harsher penalties and properly targeted player education can work in reducing head contact in hockey, all instances of it. The Department of Player Safety supposedly has people watching every second of every game. Now, as much as I'd like to watch every game, as much as I try to, and as much as I'd like to have video of every questionable incident, the truth is, I'm only one man with an iPhone and the Game Center app. I already get a lot of help from people like you who send me videos or links to incidents, or even just a quick tweet or message saying, hey, did you see? Third period, Bolts-Kings game, checking to the head penalty. Something like that. It means a lot, and it makes a huge difference. Follow me on Twitter at ToughCallBlog, and like the Facebook page Tough Call, and as you watch, if you see a cheap play or something dirty or anything that makes you go, hey, you idiot, what are you watching? How did you miss that? Please send it my way, and a big thank you to those of you who already do. Keep them coming.